You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Wait, wait, wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. Today we're talking with Julie Riesler, author, speaker, master life coach, and founder of the Youest You movement, and host of the podcast of the same name.
Julie holds a master's in health and wellness coaching and is a professor at Georgetown University. She's the founder of the Intuition School, where she helps people activate their inner wisdom and unlock their potential.
In this episode, we're going to talk about what it means to become the Youest You, how to build radical self-trust, and how to start hearing and actually listening to your intuition. Welcome, Julie.
Well, I am so happy to be here. Thank you both for having me. And I'm just really excited about this conversation.
Me too. I'm excited. And ever since I got divorced, this idea of listening to my intuition has been coming up, and I don't trust my intuition. And so I would love to learn how to trust that intuition. So, Julie, what was young Julie like? Were you always introspective and intuitive, or did that come later?
Oh my gosh, great question. I'm laughing because I keep a little picture of myself here when I was four, and I'm like, oh, there she is.
Aww.
But I was the one that, you know, felt like the trees were talking to me and magic. Fairies in the grass. And, you know, I had a very active imagination. I was a big fan of theater and dance. And so I just would always feel and imagine, you know, it sounds funny to say it now, but I just felt like I had support. And it wasn't like I had an imaginary friend with a name, but I sensed a lot of loving support in nature, in the ethers, in play and dance and things that I did. And one of the things I did, you know, I would always imagine myself outside. I would bring friends over and I would pretend to interview them, and I would say, we'll have a show. Like, I would see the whole thing. I was sensitive and I was really in tune. I mean, and that showed up also. I have a father that struggled with PTSD and addiction, and very loving, but also had a lot of self-hatred. And I could hear those thoughts. I could feel his energy when he, I think, trying to act like nothing was wrong, and I always knew. So it was a gift. I think a lot of, for me, the addictive behaviors really started because I didn't know how to handle that kind of sensitivity and listening to my intuition. So it's been there. It's definitely cracked open in the last probably 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did you think you were going to do when you grew up? Did you know that you were going to do something like this? Or what did you think?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So I always loved anything to do with interviews and journalism. I was on the newspaper. I also loved understanding people and human emotion and psychology. Like, I was in the psychology group in high school. I mean, this was like back in the 90s. And I just had assumed, you know, I'm not the best writer. It was kind of a choice. Do I go into broadcast journalism? And I ended up choosing to go all into psychology and public health. So it's interesting because today, with the degree I did in positive psychology and coaching, and then now bringing in intuition and interviewing people in interviews, it's like it's all kind of come together, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of interviewing in your podcast, what does the Youist You actually mean? And how did this philosophy evolve from your personal story?
Yeah. So when you had said, Sonia, you know, you were talking about your intuition and kind of the curiosity after divorce. For me, I would say really for me about 24 years ago when I started to get into recovery around food and sugar addiction and other, I would say self-loathing, you know, learning how to love myself. That was not something I really knew how to do. And it showed up everywhere. Everything looked fine on the outside, right? And through lots of years and hours of self-excavation through many different avenues, I had two really young kids and I had a wake-up call. And it was, hey, this is not working for you here. It was like the last thing I wanted to hear. It was really hard. I was married to a good person, great dad. I got married very young and did a lot of change in myself. And I think my higher self kind of tapped me on the shoulder, like, wake up, you know, this is not energetically the right fit. Good, again, great dad. And so that was very hard to listen to that. And I would say that was now almost 14 years ago. And since then, what I've realized is in this continuation of not just excavation, self-love, learning to trust myself, trust this voice, my higher guidance. We all have the connection to the divine. We are from it, and it shows up different for each of us. Some hear, sense, feel, see. I started to have all of those happen. And I realized, you know, your Youist You, when I started my business 10 years ago, this came out of, I didn't know I was going to do that. It was a literal like tap on the shoulder that was like, Julie, you need to do this. And to me, the Youist You is that aspect of each of us that has not been touched by ego, that is our soul, our higher self, the true, you could call it your true self, your truest self, the part of each of us that is love, that is of love, that is deserves to be loved, that is a light, that is here to express in our unique way. And that, in my humble opinion, is divine just because we're here. There's no other reason. You don't have to do anything to be worthy. So we can talk more all about that. But it emerged when I realized, oh, that's what I was doing for the last 24 plus years, was discovering, uncovering my higher self and learning how to merge, you know, me, Julie, my identity, my who I am today, with this higher version, the true self that I believe we all have and that I believe comes through our intuition.
So I just want to step back. Something that you said really tweaked my attention about, you said sugar and food addiction. We actually just had someone on to talk about sugar and food addiction. It's something I'm pretty passionate about right now. And you said that there was some self-loathing happening. What was your intuition telling you about the food and sugar addiction?
Oh, yeah. Well, sister, we could go into this for hours.
We could.
This is my entry. The message comes from the mess, right? I mean, food equals love in my family. And there was a lot of love and there was a lot of struggle. And I really used food. And I believe a lot of us who are highly empathic and sensitive use it as a way to ground, to feel safe, to get a hit. I mean, you get dopamine high when you have sugar. And, you know, I think my dad, there was a lot with my parents and equating love and food. And I think in terms of having emotions, not learning how to handle them, be with them, express them. They were really stuffed down. I saw two parents that use food. Like the birthday cake would be somehow done the next morning. Like I didn't know, we'd wake up and it was obviously, you know, usually my mom, but it would just be this like, wow, the birthday cake from last night is gone. Like this would happen with anything with sweets in our family. And I used it. I used it as a crutch. I used it to self-soothe. And it, any time that I was struggling, whether it was something to do school or relationship or dating or my family, you know, it was the drug of choice. And I had a moment in my early 20s when I was newly married that was really pretty profound. It was a, you know, I just couldn't stop eating. It was a bag of M&Ms, huge bag, and I couldn't stop. And I thankfully knew about, you know, support groups and heard my inner wisdom say, if you go to this meeting, your life will change. Your whole life will open up and change. And, you know, I was really contemplating, do I even want to live anymore? It was just, it was not something others knew. I hid it. There was a lot of shame around it. I think this is what happens when we look at any kind of addictive behavior, underneath it is fear and shame. And there was a lot of shame. The last thing I thought I would do was ever be talking about this now. I actually did a TED talk on this, talking about, you know, eating out of the trash at my work, a different trash. I mean, not just mine, like the one in the kitchen, someone threw away half of a cupcake and I'm like, still good. It's in the container. I mean, still eating out of the trash. I don't want to be eating out of the trash in my life, but it was realizing how to love myself in those different emotions and not using anything like food or sugar.
Could you talk to us a little bit more about the recovery?
Absolutely. So I actually was raised in a household. My mom, who had struggled with food and weight and, you know, in the 60s, 70s, ended up doing diet pills. It was like a Wild West in those days, like not a lot of anything with addiction. And my mom actually was in a 12-step group for food addiction and Overeaters Anonymous when I was 10. Now, by that time, I'd already done Weight Watchers and had like the gold medal, like the thing that you have for the rest of your life. Somehow at 10, I managed to be like their ultimate member. And I remember I'd go with her to meetings and thought, this is really weird. People are weird. What are they talking about? Why are they bringing in higher power? What the heck is this? Stored it away. And I kept doing different diets and programs and then overeat and undereat. You know, my first job was in a big ice cream store. So it was not ideal. I laugh like a lot of my jobs for a long time and I love them. Of course I love them. We're like in amazing food type of places.
Right.
Anyways, so for me, when I started, you know, I'd been listening to Louise Hay on tapes, read her books when I was like 11 and 12. I would hear her in the background. My mom had all of the big bumper stickers that would say, you know, like one day at a time. And I remember thinking it was weird, but I also like really luckily got a lot from the Louise Hay tapes. I mean, this is like dating myself, but we're talking late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. It was like the tapes in the car. As much as like I thought it was weird, I had the seed was planted that you can change, you can recover, you can change your thoughts, you can, it's about self-love. So it didn't germinate until my 20s when I was really feeling like I could not do this anymore. I'm sure anyone listening, like nothing looked bad on the outside. I seemed fine and happy. That doesn't mean anything. Obviously, we know that on the inside, I didn't feel that way. And I was stuffing down all of the emotions I had with struggles with my family growing up, my parents, relationships, whatever it was, not feeling good enough, all of those things with food. And so for me, it was through the 12 steps. You know, I started in Overeaters Anonymous, and that was a game changer. I started to get into the artist's way, into a preview of A Course in Miracles. And then I started getting back into theater and dance and being on camera. And it opened up the doorway to meeting my true self and to loving my true self. Not overnight, took time. I worked with a sponsor. I went to 3 to 5 meetings a week. I didn't have kids yet. Like I was really in, like, this is my full-time job while working in it. And it morphed. You know, I've done other things that have really, I would say, are part of recovery. For me, a huge component it's always been spiritual, right? And I believe our intuition, doesn't matter the religion or if you're atheist, it doesn't matter. It's this idea we're all connected to a loving source. And in turning life over, surrendering, using that source as my guidance, something happened. The ice chipped away over time. And it's a daily process. Someday it's God. Someday it's the universe. Someday it's beloved. I mean, I just, whatever feels right. And tuning in so that I am not trying to act alone here, because it can feel very, alone, I think, for many humans. One of the gifts, I think, in recovery and in this journey is creating a whole life and a business that is around being of service and helping others to unlock what's hidden, what we often have hidden within ourselves, our own inner guidance and the connection to the divine, and that worthiness and love, to me, they just go hand in hand. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, that answers it. That definitely answers it. There's so many pieces of what you just said. I could go on different tangents about, but it sounds like your portal to entry was the 12-step program in terms of connecting with a higher power. And then that evolved through the more reading you did, the more, I mean, you mentioned A Course in Miracles. And I know you interviewed somewhat recently Marianne Williamson. I'm a huge fan of Return to Love, such a great book, and love Course in Miracles as well. So it sounds like all of these different pieces has really shaped your recovery, connecting to source. Do I have that right?
100%. Yeah. Oh, and there's different entry points for everyone, has a different path. For me, through the 12 steps, A Course in Miracles, I did another personal development program about 15 years ago that just very similar to a course, but without the spiritual component. And it was really a beautiful way of seeing that we're connected to something greater and that anything is possible. And it was actually in that program that I got asked to coach, and then realized, oh my gosh, you know, because I didn't go back to get my degree in, I didn't know if I wanted to be a therapist or not. For some reason, something said, just wait. And then coached this program. And then I realized there was a program near me that had, through the positive psychology portal, health and wellness coaching, integrative. It was an integrative health-based coaching master's degree. And it was just amazing because it took the recovery model. It took the epigenetics model from Dr. Bruce Lipton. It took mind-body science principles that we know from HeartMath Institute, from Jon Kabat-Zinn. And I got to immerse myself for 2 years in this, including an integrative nutrition program that then I started to learn, oh my God, I didn't even realize sugar is actually addictive to the brain. I got to study it. So I feel blessed, you know, the work that I'm doing, it came really through the mess, right? The mess very naturally. And I just feel today, you know, there's all different kinds of addiction. There's all different things that we can ruminate on and focus on, feeling not good enough about, and have shame, use and abuse to feel better, to not feel. I guess under it all, when I think of the USU, you asked this earlier, I think Sonia, you know, it love, like you said, a return to love, Kathleen, it is all about a return to love. That's it. Yeah. That, to me, is the only answer. The real question, right, I think we're all asking is, how do I get back to that? And the answer is returning to love.
Mm-hmm. So Julie, speaking of, you went back to school. Before that, you were working in corporate America. And so how did that chapter of your life inform the work you do now? How were you feeling during that period?
Well, it's a great question. So I was with a nonprofit for about 5 years, and that's when I had a just total breakdown. It was on the metro, for those in the DC area. It was like, I have a great job, I'm married, and I am miserable. And that's what brought me to my knees. I could not stop eating. That was where we had an event. They had all these bags of M&Ms left. I'm like, something's not right. I ended up leaving. I gave them, I think, 3 or 4 months notice without a job, and just figured I'll be divinely guided. That's when I started to get into recovery, into 12 steps. And I ended up finding, I with a friend from the program. We were sitting having tea in Panera Bread, which is now huge. It wasn't at the time. And I had this, she was with me. My friend has been with me through all of this. I had this knowing something said, again, my intuition said, you're going to work here. And I thought, huh, in a food store? Like, again, really? Like, why? Okay. And I went up to the manager. I'm like, do you have an application? I just listened. I was like, screw it. You know what? I'm now realizing there's something guiding. I'm not pushing it down. I'm going to listen. And filled out an application. The owner, just the franchise owner, they just bought the franchise near me in Maryland. They had a few stores. They were going to be growing. And they were like, why do you want to work here? You have a, you know, degree and you were just working campuses all over the country and world. Like, it was a very different job. And they ended up creating a position for me. I did guest relations. I was in HR. I did all of their hiring. I was their recruiter. And then I also did leadership training. So I had these two jobs in one. I worked in the bakery cafe for the first 6 months. That was brutal, but I did it. Mm-hmm. Not eating flour and sugar is not a fun thing in a bakery cafe, but
no,
not at all. Not at all. It's like,
I can't even imagine it. That's like, the honestly, that would be torture for me.
It was torture. We had to make cookies every morning and throughout the day. And I would literally like take a, you know, people take smoke breaks. I would take a prayer break and I'd be like, I need to just pray, connect, thing, breathe. Like, what the F? Like, why? And I actually, I'll share this quick story if you want to. I can share it really quick because it's actually, it goes to intuition. There was one day, maybe 3 months in my being a manager, and then I was going to the office after the 6 months were over, but halfway through, one day in the morning, I'd opened up, you know, I finally knew what I was doing, dealt with the cookies, and I had like six different guests come in at different times. And I don't know why, but that day I had six different guests that said, you know, are you on TV? Are you on radio? Like, you just, something about your voice, your energy, do you have a show? And I'm thinking, no, like, that'd be fun. But this is years ago. I couldn't imagine how that would happen. Went home that day, got one of those like booklets that says, these are the courses happening in your county at the local, I think it was like at the local community college. I opened it up. This is years ago, obviously before the internet was not what it is now. This is so funny. I think we're talking like 2003. So it's a while back.
Okay.
Open up the book. And the first page I see in the middle is a whole class on voiceovers. And this is literally what I had just heard that day. So that night, and I thought, well, I don't know what's going on, but maybe I should take this. So I took the voiceover class. I signed up. And then it led me to doing all of these on-camera classes and teleprompter classes. And the next thing I knew, I found an agency. And on the side, I started doing like what I did when I was little, all of this voiceover work, commercials, hosting. It was so joyful, so much fun. And the irony is, I remember I got asked to do modeling. And I'm like, you want me to model? Are you kidding me? Do you understand? I said, no, we want real people. So my claim to fame was modeling at the Canyon Ranch Spa in the Berkshires on a rock. The whole thing paid for. And then it ended up going in the New York subway on Women's Health magazine. I actually have a picture of it right back here. You know, and I'm like, oh, here I am sitting on a rock. And I remember I felt God's presence. I had no makeup, there in like camping shorts. And I'm like, that's the shot that ends up getting chosen for the magazines, for the subway, they did a huge campaign. And, you know, so there was a lot guiding me. And that job, I was at Panera 11 years. I was there a long time. And it was during that time that I went through my separation and divorce and went back to school. I got my master's degree while I finished working there. So a lot of really good experience. And the food, that whole realm, I mean, that was interesting, and also just more opportunity to connect with higher power.
Were there times, Julie, in your life that you felt disconnected from your authenticity? And can you see what those periods had in common with each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can tell the work you do. That's a good psychotherapist. I love that. That's a good question. Yeah, so I think for me, a lot of it showed up with dating, and you know, for me with men, with dating with guys. Uh-huh. I think the inauthenticity, the trying to be something else, the not feeling good enough, all of that goes in the same bag. I grew up in a very high achieving affluent area outside of Boston with, I mean, we're talking, literally, we're talking about this before. I mean, I think everyone I knew went to an Ivy League school, like literally out of 20 in the circle I was friendly with, everyone went to an Ivy League. It was just highly competitive. Actually, a public school that was extremely into the arts and into education and into sports. It was like into everything. So it was overachiever. It was like a type A plus. And it just, I was sensitive. And also I loved connecting in spiritual.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Actually, and that is not what most men, boys, people want to be doing at age 14. And so I always... really great women friends, girlfriends, I still do. I struggled with how to be, like, how do I date or not, or what does that look like and be myself? And I think I really felt like, oh, I can't be myself, and that's not good enough to be dating or to be liked. And so I struggled, you know, I would say in junior high and high school with that. It might have been easier if I'd been in an all-women's school, but I wasn't. And I also don't know that I would have wanted to be. And so that piece, and I think even, you know, I dated and got married very young. I met my husband in college. He was a close friend. And, you know, I didn't know myself the way I do today. So I think, you know, I look back, it's one of the first people that said, I love you. And I think at that time, I felt that that was a choice. For a lot of reasons. And I also look and think, you know, there was a part, and I take ownership of this, where I really wanted to be loved and liked by his family, by his a big family, one of five, a beautiful family. And I didn't. And so I look back, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm sure I just mitigated my own voice to no one's fault. A lot of times we do that, right? To be liked, to be accepted, to be, and it seemed, innocuous. And I would say, I think that's part of what happened in really doing this inner work was realizing, you know, I didn't even allow myself to have a voice because I assumed that it wasn't good enough. For me, it was a lot of inner attack around worthiness and feeling like he must know more than I do. She must be like, I think I missed the memo. I always felt like somehow I missed this memo. Like I didn't get it. So let me figure it out from them. And I'm a high empath, highly sensitive. So I'm good at whoever I'm around. I also love listening. Like I just, it was a perfect storm. And I think the wake up for me, I mean, it was a real wake up, like legit. My son was, I don't know, 8 months old. My daughter was 2 and I woke up in the middle of the night. And I just knew my heart was racing. I thought I was dying of a heart attack. It was a panic attack. And I'd never had that before. And it was this feeling of, I'm just not okay here. And it was very hard because there was no real good reason other than knowing, a deep intuitive knowing that this isn't right. Reasons. I say that it can be really challenging when it's not something that you can necessarily say, hey, that was, you know, verbal abuse or that was, right. you know, he did this to me. I mean, it was really like, I just, my energy, my intuition woke me up and pushed that down. If I'm looking honestly, I probably didn't want to look at that and just used food and then used other things to not look at that. And then of course, having young kids, that will help you not sleep.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my life's work, is working on the self-worth, being authentic, because I find it really easy to. I've lived in a lot of different places and I've changed my accent. Like, I know it seems like such a small thing, but I do little things. And then when I started dating, that was a big problem. And it made me realize I wasn't ready to date until I at least attempted to fix it. Julie, how do you define intuition? Is it a feeling? Is it a knowing? Or is it something else?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's scientific definitions of it. This is more how I see it, feel it, sense it. I think of it this way. I'm going to just paint a metaphor, a picture, because I think this might be helpful. To me, the way I see it is each of us are walking around with literally the treasure box with like a mouthpiece or an earphone, or for some, you might be visual or sensing, but a treasure box. And it's often hidden, and in this treasure box is all the answers that we are looking for in life. It doesn't come all at once, but for me, when I open that treasure box, I typically hear it. So for me, I'm extremely the clairaudience, and also clairsentient, meaning I know it. I feel it, I know it, and I hear it. Now, sometimes I'll see images, and to kind of dismantle, we all have this access to our intuition, to this treasure box. And all you have to do is just think of a time that you had a knowing or a gut feeling or a sense about something, and you have no idea why. It's not logical, but you had this sense, and maybe it said turn right and you did, and you missed a whole accident, or you didn't listen and something happened. So, you know, just to really think about it for yourself, this is very helpful when I teach about it. We do a lot of this looking in the past and seeing where has this shown up and where have I listened and not listened or paid attention. I think for some of us, intuition is more visceral and you feel it. It's a gut feeling. It might be a sensation. Just for others, it's a knowing. And for some, you get a vision, and others, you hear it's your voice. But it sounds to me like it's like a calm, quiet, loving, it's a truer voice. It might sound like my voice, but it has a different cadence to it. And that I know now. When I hear that voice, that is definitely intuition, my higher self. If you look at the definition from, for example, the HeartMath Institute, which I've done training with, you know, what we have over 40,000 sensory neurites in our heart. And what the studies show there is we have electromagnetic fields around our body, but the one around our heart is very large. And that energy that's coming, the information that's coming around us through the ethers, the field, it's actually picked up through our heart. And it's transmitted to our brain and our gut. And so the idea of heart intelligence and all of these old sayings, trust your heart and listen to your heart, there's actually something really to that. So for some, though, it might be it's a gut. For some, you might feel it more in your solar plexus, in your belly. The truth is it doesn't matter. It's more about none is better or worse than the other. What's important is getting your way of opening and listening to and using this treasure box, because I found it. I mean, there's absolutely no comparison or huge comparison with like how life looked then and how it does now, leaning into intuition, complete 180 in my life, the people I've worked with. And it's here for all, it's our birthright. We all have this beautiful access. It's just, sometimes we have to dig it up a little bit.
It's interesting because for me, when I think about intuition, I tend to be able to differentiate. My intuition doesn't come from a place of fear, but I'm like, it doesn't have a fear anxiety voice. But I'm wondering, I think a lot of people confuse intuition with fear and anxiety. So how can we tell the difference?
That is a beautiful question. This comes up all the time, and I think this is really important. So I will give the example, right? I had this panic attack and massive anxiety when I woke up. It woke me up in the middle of the night. And once I was sitting up, what I heard very quietly and calmly, but it was very clear, was you're not okay here.
Uh-huh.
Calm and quiet. So, and I have many other examples of this. What I would say to you is this: with intuition, it is the tone to it. If it's something that you hear or sense or feel or know or even see, it's not going to bring fear in what it's saying. Now, you might feel, I did feel fear once I sat with it and I thought,
right,
shit, like, what do I do now? Now that I'm like literally feel awake to this, I can't pretend, right? I have to look at this. But the way, the quality of it, the voice of it, the way I heard it was very calm. So avoid the intuition. It's never going to come from a place of fear. Now, if it's something that's going to tell you to not go right because there's an accident, it might be go left. I have found there's not a lot of superfluous words with intuition. It's often, it's not how I'm speaking here. It's not verbose. It's got a cadence of a calmness to it and a truth to it. And that fear that might come after, but anxiety is going to have shame. It's going to have fear. It's going to have anger. It's going to have all the myriad of emotions and things that you would put in that realm. When you're truly tuning into intuition, that's not in the message.
So for someone who's feeling disconnected, and I see this actually a lot in my practice, where people they lose trust with themselves, either through a bad marriage that has ended, or through trauma, or lots of things, and they feel disconnected with themselves. How can someone begin to rebuild trust with their inner knowing?
Absolutely, it's such a good question. So, one of the things I love the best, and this is actually a tool that I used early on in recovery, it's called two-way prayer. And a really powerful tool is get yourself a journal or a Padlet, whatever you use. And first of all, give yourself the gift of some time of silence, however that looks, of meditation and breathing, because it just helps to slow down our processing. It helps to, you know, it works with our sympathetic nervous system. It helps to bring us from fright and flight and fawn and into a space of calm and receptivity. And using your intuitive journaling, asking questions like, you know, dear intuition, dear heart, dear higher self, dear God, whatever it is that feels right. What is the message for today? What can I learn from this failed marriage? What can I learn from the fear that I've been feeling? You're going to actually ask these big questions, and then you allow yourself to write and write and write and no editing. And the more you do this, what will happen eventually is your start, there's going to at some point be a flow of consciousness. There's going to be a frame of, you might start to notice trends of things that you're saying, like, and what I always say is go back and circle those words that are the same and give yourself that practice, because that is a place to rebuild with yourself and your higher wisdom. So that can be a really great tool to do something daily. You can do it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And ask those big questions and ask for help and just write it out. Write until you feel like you're done. No editing. Don't care about grammar. That's not important. The other thing, I'll give one other tool that I love. I call it evidence tracking. And you look in your past, and this is like, I imagine, you know, right now, springtime, you got your basket, you go out, you're looking for flowers. Like, we're going to go look in the past for flowers, so to speak, in your life. Times when you had an intuitive nudge or a thought or a sense, and you did listen, you did follow it. And I don't care. That could be, you know, not getting in the car with someone and they ended up having you know, some horrible experience or accident, or you did decide to go out that night with friends and met, actually I'm laughing because the night I didn't go out was the night Dave Matthews was there. This one night I was,
oh my gosh.
Right. I was like, darn it. I should have gone and listened to my intuition. But anyhow, so you're going to do some tracking, look and see, and you might look and see, when did I not listen to it? But we want to build this understanding, first of all, that we are always guided and loved. And I truthfully think of, you know, when I think of intuition, I think of it like my higher self, the true self. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you're building a relationship with you and you, that part of you that is all-knowing, that's connected to the divine, the soul self, whatever words work. And so the evidence tracking can be helpful to really start seeing, you know what, I have listened before. And so a question with therapy or coaching, you might say, what's the gift in, you know, in this experience now? The gift in this failed marriage? Well, I know I had one. I had one too. The gift is what I made a contract with myself. I said, I will, to my best of my ability, I will follow my intuition and love myself and speak my voice. Because the last thing I wanted to do was end a marriage with somebody and be in that situation. And so we got to build back our relationship with ourselves. And this doesn't happen overnight, but it's by being loving. It's not by shaming. It's the opposite of what we tend to do.
Right.
Through
for
love.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Julia, it's really interesting how you describe intuition. So how do you teach clients, or how can you teach me, that if I get this intuitive hit, how can I trust it when it seemingly contradicts logic?
Yeah, it's a great question. And intuition, you know, again, think of it like there is an all-knowing, seeing aspect that we as human beings, we have only a little knowledge and ability to see our perspective. Think about it. We're looking forward, right? So my eyesight only looks ahead. I can't see behind my back of my head. I think of the divine, and to me, intuition is the voice for God, right? The connection to the divine is able to see the 360, past, present, and future. That's my feeling and belief about it. There's a space where there is no time, right? And that all-knowing, intuitive guidance comes from a place of being able to see past, present, and future. So first of all, getting logic is often not gonna sync up. This happened when I left my job, I went back to school, I got divorced, I had a major health crisis, and then I started a business as a single mom. None of that made any sense. I had no savings. I don't recommend doing it this way. Mm-hmm. I knew I kept getting this nudge, the voice, I heard it. It was the best thing I could do, but it made no sense. My friends loved me and were like, wow, okay, are you okay? Like, is this a... quarter life, what's happening here? I was 35, so a little more than quarter life. But anyhow, point being, so that get that logic is not something we're going to lean on, which is hard. We're raised in a culture and society where we go only logic first. I'm not saying we don't use logic, but we want to know what those nudges are. So for you, Sonia, you're getting this pull, this nudge. And so a couple things I would do, I'd ask my higher self, my intuition, give me signs, show me, give me nudges, make it clear. So this is where it's actually, I have an intuition school. The first thing we talk about and teach is intention. You set the intention. We're all sovereign beings and we get to decide. You don't have to listen to your intuition. I mean, you don't have to, right? I've done life not listening. Try it. It's fine. Nothing's necessarily, I wouldn't say not bad's going to happen, but we always have sovereignty. We always have the free choice, free will. So what I like to do is set an intention. So the intention might be, please, like, help me to do the will here for the highest good of me and all those that I'm working with. Okay. That's an intention. Another intention, show me, make it clear to me, make it so flipping clear that, that I can't miss it anymore. Signs, synchronicities, whatever, please. So that's also building a relationship between the divine and ourselves, our higher self and ourself, however you call it. So, and then I would start writing and tracking the evidence you get. This is how I do it, right? And also make it clear in my energy, in my body, You know, muscle testing, this is a real thing. One of the things I teach is the sway test for the muscle using your body. We know this with criminal psychology, and we know this with when you are into something, you tend to lean into it. And when you're not, you lean away. That's a basic, without overthinking it, right? When you want to be near somebody, think of someone that you love, your best friend, your child, your dog, partner. You want to be close to them. You lean towards. Mm-hmm. If you feel like, get away, you lean away. So notice, like, what's your body doing? And then you could even say, like, you could ask your higher self, is it the highest good to go in the next 6 months? And you might lean away. Maybe it's not right now. In the next 12 months, yeah. And you lean forward. So there's so many tools, but I hope that those are a couple that can start to build that connection.
Yeah, Kathleen and I, we have had sessions with this intuitive coach, and yeah, the timing part, right, is important. It may not be right now, but it may be, yeah, like 6 months, a year from now. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you do the evidence tracking, I mean, this just happened. I hope you guys don't mind. It's just, this happens all the time. I just had a real life experience of this. It's real. It's on the court. We want to be using this, right? So I was supposed to be doing, I love Eden Energy Medicine. I've used energy medicine. I was going to do one of the 4-day major trainings. I was ready to sign up. I love the woman who teaches it. Great. It's nearby. And a dear friend of mine who started the Illuminate Film Festival, it's an amazing film festival for all conscious. I've gone and volunteered before. This year it's in California. Thought, well, I don't know if I can make it out there. And I ended up reconnecting with her, interviewed her, talked to her about this crazy story. She had a brain tumor, and it was a very small chance. She not only healed from it, her husband got a brain tumor as well. 5 years later, healed from it. I mean, just a crazy story. We shared it on the podcast, and we were talking about this film festival this year. And she said, it's all about looking through the lens of love. I have been using that phrase. All I want to do is look through the lens of love. And I had this entire feeling from my crown to my feet. I just felt like electricity. I thought, I have to go. I don't even know why. This makes no sense. This is not logical. I teach a coaching course. Like, how am I going to do this? And I knew it. I knew it. I sat with it. I journaled over it. It kept getting stronger and stronger. So I ended up not doing the energy training, which I thought I was doing. I ended up going, and it was incredibly transformative for me individually, personally, with the films I saw, and then many of the beautiful relationships I made that I know are going to add to the work that I'm doing and to my own. And I was so clear there. I was like, I now see why I'm here. But I did not, I've learned, didn't make any sense. It was not easy. I had to change everything around. Flying to Santa Barbara is not a direct flight. Look, whatever, we could go in the hole. So sometimes it shows up like, I thought this was what I was doing. Now it's here. I think the last thing I would say to that is, you know, it's all our perception, right? So really getting that we can think one thing, and are we open? Are we willing to follow something? You know, I've heard God being the acronym good orderly direction, right? This good or great orderly direction that you may not have contemplated before, but when we're open to it and we're following it and then we're tracking it and you start to build that confidence because you start to see, you know what? It always leads to the something better and to the highest good. That's where you build your relationship with yourself, your confidence, self-worth, love, and you can start to trust it more and more.
We're just going to wrap up soon, Julie, but what do you want women in transition, women who are feeling lost or stuck, to know about their intuition? If you could leave them with one thing today, what would it be?
Yeah, I feel like, thank you. I feel like I just took a megaphone and gave it to my heart is the image that my intuition just showed me. And I feel like my heart is saying this, and that is, I kind of want to say, listen the F up to yourself. You, everything, the guru you're seeking, the answers you're seeking, the love you're seeking, everything you're seeking. I know people say this, it is true. It is absolutely within you. It is in your, that intuitive treasure box. You deserve to have a feeling of calm, confidence, self-love, self-worth, because that's who we are. You don't have to earn it. The best thing you can do is to start small and begin by listening and honoring your inner voice, your inner knowing, your intuition, and just watch. Like, the best thing to do is do an experiment. Watch what happens when you do listen, when logic doesn't make sense and you follow it. So that's what I would say is, from my heart with the microphone or megaphone, I feel like I'm handing it to each of you and saying, put the megaphone to your heart and let her speak and listen and trust. She's got you.
Thank you. I'm so glad we're ending on that note with the megaphone to the heart. Thank you so much for joining us, Julie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you both. I loved this conversation. I hope that it added value, and I hope that it helps with really accessing intuition. I believe in this superpower so deeply. It's been a game changer in my life and so many clients' lives. And we all have it and it's free. So let's use it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for listening to Sisters in Sobriety. And we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.